Today is November 10th, 2018, and this is Karen Brewster here with Kathleen Mike Dalton, and her daughter Libby is also here with us. And we're continuing to talk about when Mike and her husband Jim Dalton lived up in Barrow and Dewline and all kinds of things, and where we'll see where we go today. So, Mike, you had something you wanted to tell me about the utilities when you lived at the camp in Barrow?
Yeah, the Quonset hut that I lived in was a smaller one. They had very large ones, hangar size, and smaller ones that you're used to seeing pictures of.
Mm-hmm. And you said you had electricity?
They had electricity generated for the entire camp. It was generated by a large Caterpillar generator. Provided service for in the entire camp.
Okay.
And water was pumped from a freshwater lake into a tank hauled around on a sled by around camp. Well, it'd go get filled up with water, and it'd come to my house, my Quonset, and it would pump water into a holding tank, which was a 55-barrel drum.
Mm-hmm. 55-gallon drum?
Gallon.
And that drum was inside your
inside the house. It was on a frame, elevated about, well, ceiling height, so it wouldn't freeze. And of course it rusted.
Yeah.
And the water would come out rusty, full of rust. And it would drain into the gravel underneath the Quonset hut. No problem with the drainage.
Right.
A lot of problem with the intake.
Did you have wringer washers? Is that how you did your laundry?
No, the larger items I just send to the camp laundry.
Oh, okay.
Which was handy. Okay. But for smaller items, I bought a little washing machine, just about big round.
Wow.
And about 18 inches in diameter.
Okay.
And it had a little agitator in the hood, in the roof, the lid.
Huh.
And it'd go down.
Wow.
So I was able to wash smaller items. And then I had a wooden rack in the house that I'd hang stuff up.
Wow.
So you said there were problems with the intake of the water, that it would freeze up? Is that what you mean?
No.
You said it drained out all right.
No, it drained out on the gravel underneath the closet.
Uh-huh.
There was enough heat from the building to keep it thawed underneath. So, and gravel is the best drainage.
Mm-hmm.
How did you deal with the rust? Did your clothes get all
what?
Stained? How did you deal with the rust, the rusty water?
Just dealt with it.
Did you drink it?
No. We drank melted ice, which we melted.
So that was one of your tasks, probably. It kept you busy, was keeping a fresh supply of drinking water.
Yeah, you just have to bring it in and let it slowly melt.
Oh. So who brought the ice to you?
Can't remember who brought the ice. I think I got it. Mostly I used drifted snow because I could shovel that into a big container.
Mm-hmm.
Bring it in.
So did you go out to the lake and cut ice and bring it in?
No, I couldn't bring it in. I couldn't cut it.
Yeah.
But we did have a freshwater lake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's behind the camp there.
It was supposed to be freshwater. They had dog team tracks across it.
Mm-hmm. So how did the water get from the 55-gallon elevated barrel to either the sink or your washing machine?
Came in small pipe, gravity-fed.
And so you used that water for?
For shower and washing, brushing my teeth, washing my hair.
Did you cook with it?
Yes, you could. You have to dodge the pieces of rust.
Did you ever get that 55-gallon drum replaced? So it was less rusty?
No, it just got more rusty.
Yeah. I forgot to ask you when we first started how you got your nickname Mike.
Oh, my father wanted a boy, so he named me Mike. She had a daughter already, he had named Patricia, Pat.
And so the nickname just stuck, huh?
Yes. Actually, it wasn't a nickname, it was a name.
Oh, Michael?
Michael.
Kathleen Michael.
Kathleen Michael, I see. And so your dad used the Mike part.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right.
What were you going to tell Karen about the 55-gallon drums?
Well, I'm getting to that.
Okay, go ahead.
We recycled those 55-gallon drums and used them for the porta potty. The bathroom in the Quonset was added after the Quonset was placed there, and it was just a little shed built into the side of the Quonset hut. And in the lower part of it, it was wider than the lower part than the top. So they extended that out, built a bench in there, cut a hole in it, and put a 55-gallon drum under it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, back to the water. The people in the village did the same thing for water,
mm-hmm.
but they stored their ice. They would get ice from the freshwater lake by dog team, take it over and stack it up. They'd cut it in rectangular pieces. They'd stack it up near their house.
Mm-hmm.
And the dog team got through hauling it over, they'd go over and pee on it. So it was yellow snow.
Right.
Yellow ice. They'd pick it up, take it to the house, and use it.
Mm.
That's still the case at Barrow. Yellow ice road. Yellow snow road.
Your attached bathroom with the 55-gallon drum, did that have any heat in there?
Just the heat that came from the Quonset hut.
Okay.
Yeah, it got kind of cold in there.
You didn't stay around very long.
Didn't stay on the potty long.
No.
Especially when we were having a storm.
Oh. You could feel the wind blow right through?
Right across.
Yeah. And then somebody came and would empty that barrel?
No, it would be frozen probably in the winter.
Uh-huh.
They'd load it up and haul it out with other barrels they'd collected around camp and drive out on the ice and dump it on the ice.
The whole barrel?
Dump the whole barrel. No, everything was frozen.
Well,
usually.
So then when the ice went out?
When the ice went out north, south, east, or west, the potty went with it.
The barrels went with it. So there's a lot of barrels somewhere out in the bottom of the ocean out there, maybe, or they've been rusted away. get rid of your trash, it just goes out, disappears.
They'd haul it out as far as they could.
Yeah.
And hope that it... You could do that until maybe June of every year.
Mm-hmm.
And it would start melting through the ice and fall to the bottom, wherever the bottom was.
Right.
So God knows how many barrels of poop are out there in the Arctic Ocean.
Yeah.
Over the years.
Yeah.
Some of it was pretty close to the community.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are enough storms out there that maybe it's gotten...
Mixed up?
Mixed up.
Oh, yeah, that was the theory.
Yeah.
You didn't have to deal with it.
And fed some fish out there, who knows?
Hmm?
And fed some fish and worms and things. But so in the summertime, the barrels weren't frozen. Was it smelly being in that porta potty?
It was.
What'd they do with them when they got full in the summertime? Put the lid on? And
they'd wait and give them to the Navy. Say, take them back to San Diego.
Oh.
Get rid of them someplace.
They put a lid on them and the Navy would haul them out.
Haul them out to a scrapyard someplace.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I heard that at the camp they had a similar kind of setup for the men who lived in camp.
Mm-hmm.
It was more of them in a row, I think.
More than?
I think they had them kind of in a row. I don't know that they had their own private.
They didn't have their private potty, but they had. T1 was the first one, and T2 and T. Each building was identified by alphabet and numeral.
Okay.
So they had T1, and so they know which potty they were talking about.
I wonder what year utilities came in there. Sewage treatment plants and stuff like that in the 70s?
I would think in the 70s. I don't know. Do you know, Mike?
Barrel utilities?
Yeah.
It had to be sometime the utilities because Eben Hobson died in 79. And he was pretty progressive.
Yeah. And the North Slope Borough was established in 72, I mm-hmm. think. So somewhere in that period, maybe, mm-hmm. when they started to have money from oil development. Yeah, the camp was early on, the camp had more facilities than the people in the village did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, are you ready to talk a little bit about the dew line? Or have we finished? Do you have other things you wanted to tell me?
Not much.
Okay. So you had mentioned last time when I had already turned the recorder off about Jim hiring local people and mm-hmm. having to fight the union.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about that?
I thought I did.
The recorder wasn't on. You have to tell me again.
Oh, I do?
No, you don't have to. You can do whatever you want. I know you have said before that Jim hired local people at the camp. Mm-hmm. Did he also hire local people for the dew line?
Yes. It was a blessing because anybody in the camp who wanted to work during our contractor stay, if he was halfway competent, could get a job. And he could learn on the job. And that's how most of them did it. Learn from master mechanics and mm-hmm. master electricians. So they had good instruction.
Mm-hmm.
So did the unions just hear about it?
Well, of course, anybody with any experience in Arctic construction was hired when the dew line started, because that's how it was built. Mm-hmm. So economically, it could put the word out to Fairbanks that they needed two electricians for 2 months, or a plumber for the season, or whatever, and they'd fly them up.
And so to have those jobs, you had to be in the union to be an electrician?
Under the due line contract with the Defense Department. Okay. They had to. It was the federal government required that there be union wages and union
workers.
Workers who. Yeah.
Was that Davis-Bacon wages at mm-hmm. that point? Yeah.
And of course, the people from the village didn't meet those standards.
Mm-hmm. So, how did Jim get around that?
Well, he refused to fire him. When the union came up and confronted him and the Arctic contractors themselves, the whole outfit. Well, there were mostly Arctic contractors' leftovers. Mm-hmm. He brought up to man all the construction sites. And he refused to fire them. So they had a big powwow. And the people they were wanting to get rid of, the union wanted to get rid of, were highly qualified because they'd had 3 to 6 or 7 years experience.
Mm-hmm. Because they'd worked for Arctic contractors before, mm-hmm. right?
Yes. They were skilled carpenters. They knew how to read a scale or a measure. Mm-hmm. And what a 90-degree angle was, probably didn't learn in school, but they had to learn stuff like that on the job. And the plumbers learned why you'd put this joint there and why you'd put another joint in another place. So if they could pass the test that the union provided, they had to hire them. Mm-hmm. So he hired them, and he had a crew of at times of almost all Eskimos.
So they got into the union.
So they got into the union, had to accept them.
Nice.
And it's because your husband, at that powwow, he convinced the union.
He said, yeah, he wouldn't back down. He said, they're qualified. They worked for him for 6 to 10 years.
Yeah.
Or 5 to 10 years. They were able to start and run tractors and repair them. They learned carpentry, plumbing, electricity.
Good for him.
And the reason for, you know, why a carpenter had to have a right angle there and not there.
Yeah.
And why they did that. And, you know, they're very bright people. They could understand because you had a right angle, you had better support. Could go up, and the pressure from the, it would be a right angle, maybe a right angle shelf support.
Mm-hmm.
They could explain that the pressure from there came down on the shelf, but also put pressure on that member that came next to the wall, so you could put more weight on it if it had a right angle, mm-hmm. things like that, yeah. Practical things.
Yeah.
And that a circle had 360 degrees, and a half a circle had 180, and on and on.
So it was a win-win. The union was
happy?
Yeah,
it was. The unions had competent help, and they didn't have any high school up there, so they'd... The men that he hired didn't have any high school training.
Right.
A very few of them by that time had gone to Mount Edgecombe High School. A very few of them.
Yeah.
Not many. Later, more of them went.
Right. Well, and you say, Libby, that was a win-win. The Dew Line got a really good
good experienced crew.
They got a good building built.
Mm-hmm.
Or buildings built.
And then the union increased their membership. That's good for the union.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if local hire was even thought of then.
No. That's what it sounds like. No. It sounds like your dad was the leader of that.
He was.
Yeah.
He wouldn't back down.
Hmm. I wonder what union Ned Nusinginya joined. I'm going to go get
Oh, heavens, I have no idea.
Get his picture.
So was your husband well-liked then by the...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They treated you and him well when you lived up
there?
Oh,
yeah, with a lot of respect.
Mm-hmm.
And vice versa.
Yeah, I can tell from the way you talk about it. So Libby's bringing us the picture of Ned.
This is just a little one I have.
Oh, yeah.
Original blown up. It's getting framed.
It's a beautiful picture.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful picture of him.
I wonder if he was a Teamster.
Probably.
Teamsters, the ones who drive.
The expediters.
Expediters, yeah.
I bet he was a foreman, too.
Yeah, that's a picture when he was, around middle-aged there? I don't know how old.
I think he was probably around 75 or so.
Oh, so that's when he was older.
Well, I think this is taken.
Is it taken in here?
The background is... It was taken in this house, I think.
Oh, this house?
Well, it looks like the wooden...
Looks like wood paneling behind him.
Wooden background.
Could be. Yeah, just think about it. You'll probably remember eventually.
Or one of his grandchildren might have a sense of how old he looks.
Mm-hmm.
He still has grandchildren who are around...
Living at Burl?
Mm-hmm. His daughter, Mabel, just passed away this last year, I think.
Mm-hmm. I remember reading about her.
Yeah.
Mabel Hobson.
No, Mabel Panigue.
Panigue?
Yeah, was her married name.
Yeah.
She was a Nusinginya. I think. I have it right. Mabel Hobson, who used to live here in Fairbanks, she was a Brower.
Yeah.
Yes. I had to think about it for a second.
Well, the reason Jim was able to get that seal oil lamp, he was given it to him by the elders at Wainwright.
Mm.
Of course, he hired people from Wainwright, too, and they had never seen a paycheck before, ever.
Wow.
Didn't know what it was.
And then would they take that paycheck to the village store and cash it?
Mm-hmm. There, and finally they got a bank branch. Bank of Fairbanks was renamed the...
Bank of the North?
Bank of the North.
Yeah.
They were the first to come into Barrow and to Kotzebue.
So when you were there with your husband working on the dew line construction, did you live out at the camp or you lived by the dew line?
Lived in another Quonset hut.
Okay.
And they had remodeled the interior of that hut so it had a kitchen area.
Oh.
Which was really, really nice, a stove and a refrigerator.
So you could finally do some cooking?
Mm-hmm. Well, George was just a toddler then, so you had to feed him. So I didn't take him. I took him to the camp mess hall once in a while. But they didn't prepare baby food.
No. Those were the days where you had to cook all your own baby food. You couldn't just go buy a jar at the store.
Well, I could send a letter to Lindy Lindbergh at Lindy's store in Fairbanks, and he'd fill up a order for me and send it up so I could get baby food if I needed it. But mostly it was manufactured there.
I didn't think they made commercial baby food till later. I didn't know that starting in the 50s you could get...
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. They even had disposable diapers.
Oh, really?
They did. Oh. Wow.
What did you use on George?
What did I use?
Yeah. Did you use cloth diapers for him up in Barrow?
Yeah.
More economical?
They had a diaper liner so I could throw the poop out.
Yeah.
And then to wash them, and they got kind of brown after a while.
Well, it was that rusty water.
Mm-hmm.
So was he born in Fairbanks?
Mm-hmm. St. Joseph's Hospital.
Okay. So he was born in between when you lived up there?
Or yes.
Yeah. Were you pregnant when you were living in Barrow?
Second time.
1954? 1953?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You were pregnant with Libby?
George.
Oh, with George.
George.
Okay. So what was that like, being pregnant up there?
Well, it slowed me down a bit.
Did you get a lot of advice from the other ladies up there?
Advice?
Yeah.
No.
They were older, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Already had families?
Well, by that time, you could have children living
during
with you.
During the dew line.
During the dew line, you could have families.
During Arctic Contractors, no.
Right.
Oh, yeah, this is dew line.
Right. So, with the dew line, before we had talked about some of the other women who were there during Arctic Contractors days. Now, during the dew line time, were there other women and families you spent time with?
There were other women there, but a lot of them were repeats. Had been there during our contractor state, but not many.
Mm-hmm.
Who were the repeats?
I can't remember.
Lila May?
Lila May, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Lila May King?
Yeah. Marcella Lawson, was she there again?
Yes.
Do you remember any of the new people, their names?
Not really.
Okay. You might think of it if you remember.
That's hard to remember.
Yeah. Sometimes those things come later in the middle of the night.
I wanted to tell you about the mess hall.
Okay.
Where we ate was a separate wing off of the main mess hall. And they had picnic-like tables where you could seat six people at the table. And Mrs. Wiggins was narrow in the shoulders and broad in the hips. I looked over one day and there was Mrs. Wiggins, narrow, like that.
Mm-hmm.
And next to her was Don Buck, the man I talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
He was Athabascan, very healthy Athabascan. And he was sitting next to her. He had real broad shoulders and very narrow hips. And he was sitting right next to her. Broad shoulders, narrow hips. They just fit. It was amazing. Almost the exact dimension, you know.
Did they sit together side by side very often?
Lots of times.
Because they fit in like a puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you were going to tell me her narrow hips made her slip down through the picnic table and her broad shoulders kept her from going all the way.
Could have. But there are only about three people each side.
Uh-huh.
He was a really competent man. He came from... He was Athabascan, and I don't know where he came or what his origin was.
Mm-hmm.
But he was half-breed. He'd had the advantage of education, so That's one of the reasons he was in the job he had, because he had other training opportunities than most of the natives there. And so, really nice guy.
What was his name again?
Don Buck.
Don Buck.
Well, you said that where you ate was in a separate wing.
It was just a small Quonset hut that had been set, big, long one. And they used a small Quonset hut as a wing, mm-hmm. built it next as a wing. That's where we had to go. They kept any women out of the main hall.
Okay.
Except once in a while, I'd prance George through there. He'd have to stop at every table. Hi, little man, what's your name? George. George what? George Dalton. Dalton? Ooh, are you Mr. Dalton's boy? It was really cute. They missed their family so much.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure George must have liked the attention, too.
Were the women just looked on as a distraction?
Yeah.
Because they didn't work?
Well, they didn't want them working. Because
they wouldn't let them work, yeah.
They'd be a distraction.
Mm. And they kept you separate for eating from the guys. Was it a distraction, or did they think they were protecting you?
Distraction.
Mm-hmm. Even during meal times, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So
they just had a policy. Women stayed in their space.
But your husband, he could eat with you, and this Don Buck, he could eat with you guys?
Mm-hmm.
So they're like upper management.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. And did they keep the natives and non-natives separate?
No. Not at all.
Okay.
The non-natives were there all day. For three, if they lived in the camp, they're there for three meals. The natives came over in the morning they got to work about 8 o'clock. They'd have lunch there.
Mm-hmm.
Then they'd go home for the night.
Just going to ask about that.
Seems to me there was something else I wanted to mention on that.
Okay.
Did the dew line work around the year, or did they take summers off and just work in the
winter? No, they didn't take any time off.
Oh, they worked.
Individuals took time off.
But the project kept going.
Yeah, it never stopped.
They probably were in a hurry to get it built.
You bet.
Now, was your husband in charge of all of the dew lines, or just the one at Barrow?
From the 141st parallel, the Canadian border, to Point Lay.
Okay, so all the northern ones.
The Alaska sector.
Yeah. That's a big project to supervise and
hire
people for. It
was. Hundreds of miles.
Yeah. And each site had its own crew who were working on building them? Wow.
Yeah, each site had its own supervisor,
mm-hmm.
its own supply system, own utilities, if you could really call them utilities.
Mm-hmm. But your husband was in charge at the top of all of that. Wow.
He was superintendent of the western sector, which was what we just described.
Right. Yep, that's a big area.
Do you remember how many sites there were? Were there 5, 6, or 7?
I think there were probably 12 or 13.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Huh.
I don't know, I wasn't involved in that end of the management.
I know there's barter... They were every so many miles.
Yeah.
So, like from the Canadian border, it would be Barter Island... I can't remember. There's another one in there.
Now, from Barrow to Barter Island, they had 1, 2, 3, probably. Barter Island was probably number 4 or 5.
Because it was Pow Main, Pow...
Pow 1, Pow 2, Pow 3.
Wasn't there Pow A and Pow B? Or did they just use numbers?
There were some, A and B.
Yeah.
What did the POW stand for? POW.
Can't remember right now.
I know Barrow was POW Maine, I think, right? Was Barrow the POW Maine, the main one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it was Point Barrow.
Yeah. And there was Lonely Point. Point Lonely or Lonely Point by Cape Simpson. There's one out there. There's one at Wainwright. Barter Island, and there's a couple in between.
Mm-hmm.
And then Point Lay, which is Cape Lisburn.
Yeah, Lisburn was the main. They had the main side at Barrow, a main side at Barter, and then a main side sub-main, one layer down.
Mm-hmm.
Between Barrow and Point Lay.
Yeah, at Lisburn.
And they could resupply from those sub sites.
Right.
They could haul in. They're going to haul in pipe, or they didn't use so much pipe during dew line. If they could haul it in, going to Point Lay, they could drop off half a load maybe of lumber or fuel, or a half a load of food supplies. And when the far left and far right sites ran low on things, they didn't have to clear into Barrow.
Right.
They go to those sub-sites.
So, like in the summertime when a barge would come in with all the supplies, they would drop it at the main site, and then once it froze up, would they haul it over land?
They'd haul it to the sub-1, sub-2s.
Right.
Between Barrow and Barter Island, one of those in there would have capacity for more storage.
Right.
So if Barrow ran short on lumber, they could go over there, haul it a short distance. Or if they ran out of sugar,
right,
there'd be a supply of food over at that main site. Wouldn't have to go all the way to Barrow to get it.
Right. But did the ships in the summertime stop at all of the sites?
Just I would say no. Probably half of them.
Mm-hmm.
Barrow and Barter Island.
Yeah.
Because people come from another site into Barter to get some 55-gallon drums of fuel. Same thing. They wouldn't have to go all the way to Barrow to get it.
Right. And then, since your husband was superintendent, did he have to go make visits to all the sites?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
And how did he go do that? By airplane?
By airplane.
And I guess it was a Department of Defense project, so did they have their own plane?
No. They had a contract with a flying outfit.
Do you know who the flying outfit was?
Yeah, the first one was out of state, inexperienced pilots, despite the recommendation of the Alaskans.
Mm.
They flew a lot of planes into the ground.
Oh my.
By and large, they were. The main one was, I think they called it Transamerica or something like that.
Hmm.
They were out of state.
And then they decided to go in state?
No.
They just kept them?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Pretty much.
Hmm.
Is that who Chris Birch's father flied for?
No, he didn't fly for them.
Oh.
He flew for Jim for a smaller outfit like Colorado Oil and Gas. I think it was... Might have been Phillips Petroleum.
Oh.
And he was just a loner, small. He was a miner who had his old airplane.
Oh, okay.
So that was later.
Hmm?
That was later.
Umiat.
Yeah, Umiat. Okay.
later.
Yeah.
After the dew line.
So with the dew line, they continued to hire an outside aviation company, huh?
I think so.
They never used an Alaska.
Pretty much, as I recall. But I kept my nose out of that end of the business.
Yeah.
I was invited to.
Invited to keep your nose out? Mm-hmm.
All the women were.
Yeah.
Politely invited to keep their nose out of the construction business.
Mm-hmm. Did you worry about your husband doing all that flying and traveling around?
Yeah. It's hazardous. Lost a lot of pilots.
Because of bad weather?
Inexperienced flying.
Inexperienced
in the Arctic mostly. Bad weather mostly.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Wow.
Could I get a pain pill?
Yeah.
Is it odd time?
No, it's not.
Back. Okay.
In the winter of 1951-52, I lived in Umiad.
Okay. Tell me about that.
The temperature on the 1st of January was 40 below, and it stayed there until the 1st of March.
Wow.
40 below all, 3 months, 2 months. Solid. Mm.
Umiat might have one of the lowest recorded temperatures ever in the U.S. I think I've read that, but...
So who else was living in Umiat at that time?
There was one other woman. And her husband was the head of the geophysical company doing geophysical work.
So why were you in Umiat?
Well, they were advancing the exploratory work for Arctic contractors out of Umiat. And there was a major expansion in activity and in equipment and supplies and people. So they sent Jim down there because he'd had a lot of experience out of Barrow.
Mm-hmm.
And what they needed and you know, like communication, mm-hmm. transportation, supplies.
Were they drilling gas wells or oil wells?
Oil wells.
Oil wells?
Mm-hmm. Never hit gas at Umiat that I'm aware of. Most of the wells have gas in them,
mm-hmm.
just as a matter of course.
But they hit oil.
Yeah,
they sure did. I think you have a jar of it
here,
yeah.
Yeah, they had a rig going just a short distance out of Umiat camp when I was there. And the setup was pretty much the same. They had a large Quonset hut. All of the buildings and vehicles and supplies like radio communications were World War II. They'd been used out in the South. They were recycled World War II
mm-hmm.
supplies. Like the Quonset huts had housed South Pacific troops and of course the Marston matting came from the Navy down there landing on beaches, airplane landings.
Mm-hmm.
So most everything was recycled World War II stuff.
And it was cat trained down there?
Who?
It got there by cat train?
Well, to get any supplies there, they had to, 51 and 52, it was still Arctic contractors. And yes, they had to haul everything by cat train.
It's 160 miles from
mm-hmm.
Barrow?
Mm-hmm.
Due south or?
Pretty much due south.
Southeast a little bit?
A little bit southeast. Now, how did you get there?
I flew in an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
So there were only two women and I went to the mess hall to eat most of the time. But I had bought a roaster oven. And according to the recipe book that came with it. You could bake in it. So I tried that a few times. It worked pretty well. And I got to know the pilots. And one pilot, at all of these camps, the number one can't think of what word I'm trying to use.
The number one rule?
Request?
No.
Priority?
Priority for camp morale was the food. So they had a lot of steak and a lot of prime rib and a lot of really high quality meals. And one day I was talking with this pilot. We were eating dessert after lunch, and we were eating pie. He was telling me how much he liked banana cream pie, and I said, oh, I think I could make that for you, because I have a roaster oven I can bake things in. He said, good, next time I come to Umiad, I'll phone you. He would radioed in and had the radio man come tell me, whatever his name was going to land about 1:30 that day. I'm looking forward to the banana cream pie. So I got busy and made a banana cream pie.
Wow.
But it never got thick enough. It was kind of juicy.
More like banana soup pie.
Hmm?
More like banana soup than banana cream.
Mm-hmm. The cream part never got really very solid or very thick. And I didn't know what to do. And my first big offer is a failure. And then I got to thinking, it's pretty cold outside. Maybe it'll get thicker with cold. By the time I got out to the airport, I walked. By the time I got out to the airport carrying this pie, it was frozen. So he didn't know the difference. It was that January 1 to March 1 cold spell.
Yeah.
He thought it was great.
All right. Well, did you have bananas up there? Wow.
What'd you make the crust out of?
I made it out of butter, and real butter, flour, a little bit of salt, and butter for the...
Oh, from scratch then?
Yeah, it was good. Well, it tasted good.
That's what I was figuring. Like, well, you had bananas? You could use fresh bananas?
Well, they fly in fresh food.
Wow.
They look forward to that.
And then for the cream part, I don't know what goes into banana cream besides bananas.
A lot of butter and cream and a little flour to thicken it. I don't know what recipe
sugar.
I used. I had a recipe book and I just followed the recipe.
Did you have evaporated milk instead of cream, maybe?
No, I could sneak into the main mess hall and get stuff like cream.
Ah.
One thing you learn in camps like that is to get friendly with the cooks.
Good advice.
Did any of the locals, the Inupiats, drift over towards the kitchen work? Did any of them enjoy the cooking?
Yeah, I think there were some of them. You mean as workers?
Yeah.
Yeah, they came over as inexperienced
craftsmen.
So what Libby's asking, did some of the people who worked in the kitchens, were they local Inupiat people?
Mm-hmm. The ones who wanted to get a foothold on the project.
Were they men or women?
No, men. No women. No women.
They didn't even hire local women in the kitchen.
No, not at all.
To me, that'd be a great job because, yeah, you don't have to get dirty and
but
work
they,
outside.
Do
you remember any of the cooks by name?
Mm-mm.
Shorty?
Mm-mm.
There wasn't a Shorty?
I was thinking, too, that you had the advantage of being the superintendent's wife. That might have helped a little bit.
Could be. Mm-hmm. No, everybody liked Jim. He was very modest guy, and he treated everybody the same. everybody the same. You know, the poorest Eskimo to the most highly educated white man. He treated them the same with respect and with their job and their person.
Mm-hmm.
And they loved him. Eskimos really loved him.
Yeah. Well, you were out in Umiat. Were there any Inupiaq workers who came out
no,
there?
No, they didn't come down there.
By choice, probably?
They were day workers at Barrow.
So
they could live at home and work at the base camp. Some of them went on as Catskillers.
Yeah.
And maybe just a roustabout.
Mm-hmm.
He did a little of everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they worked on the cat train, they'd go out for a few days, probably, and then
yeah,
be back
go
home.
On the same schedule as everybody else.
Yeah, and then they went back
but
home.
The only times they were on the cat train, as I recall, were as cat skinners. And
now, what's a cat skinner?
What's a cat skinner?
So that drives the cat.
Drives the cat.
Yeah.
Okay. Instead of calling them an operator,
they were called cat skinners. I don't know how that term came about.
Hmm?
How did the term cat skinner come about instead of calling them a driver?
I don't know. You'd have to ask one of them.
I don't know.
Stop by the cat house down on Van Horn and ask them.
Yeah. Well, and then when the Dew Line was being built, there were Inupiaq men who worked on those projects, but they were hired from the closest village?
Mm-hmm. Barter Island or Barrow,
mm-hmm.
usually.
Or Wainwright. So I was going to say, if somebody was from Barrow, he didn't get sent out to go work in Barter Island, did he?
No. That was usually Barter people.
So what else can you tell me about that living out in Umiat?
About what?
About Umiat, when you lived out there. Is there anything else you want to tell me?
I wasn't there long enough to have any adventures. Except I did have a dog, and she died of rabies.
Oh, no.
Really?
At Umiat.
Oh, that's too bad.
Mm-hmm.
She get bit by a fox?
Apparently.
She must have.
There was a lot of rabies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember Bud Fate telling stories about Umiat, his days in Umiat.
Mm-hmm.
He was a roughneck.
Mm-hmm.
And they worked 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
Worked around the clock. Drilling. And he worked the night shift.
Yeah, he actually worked on the deck of the rig.
Yeah.
Where they actually do the work.
Where the drill is going.
Drilling. Haven't seen him for a long time.
Yeah, he has some amazing stories about his times.
He was a dentist later, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. I've always wanted to interview him.
He got his father... Well, he didn't get him the job, but he told him to apply for the job as the doctor at the BIA hospital.
Yeah.
And while he was there, he'd come over and be the doctor for Arctic Contractors.
Okay. Now, that was Bud or that was Bud's father?
That was Bud's father.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he would set up some office hours at the camp there for some time. Then people could go, I mean, if they had a broken wrist or something he could tend to. In the office,
mm-hmm.
the guys could go in there. Otherwise, they had to get over to the hospital at the village.
Mm-hmm. And was that the same with the Dew Line time? Or
Both times.
Both times.
I think he was up there both times.
So how long were you in Umiat?
I was only there about 3 months.
Oh, that January to March, okay.
I had enough of Umiat.
Did it get lonely there? Did you get lonely in Umiat?
Not too lonely. I'd go to the mess hall, and there, the crew there was smaller than Barrow, so I got to know some of the fellows. Some of them could take it. There's, for entertainment, we had to make our own, and they had some movies. They had a special concert hut, small one like my residence, as a movie house. And I'd go to that, and they have a one of these rectangular space heaters in the center. Then just benches, then a screen. So we'd go in there and hunch down in our parkas and watch the movie.
Was it a little screen like this one?
A little what?
The screen that the what kind of screen did they show the movie?
Larger than that. Oh.
A little larger.
That's good.
But it was that same like a freestanding screen that you'd pull up. Yeah. So were the best seats in the house right by the heater?
Yeah, I guess they were.
Is that your phone that's dingy?
I think so.
There was one fellow there who would never miss a movie. He'd come in from that minus 40 wearing his parka.
Aww.
Not wearing his parka. He'd come into the movie and he'd sit next to the heater. And he'd put his parka on.
Do you remember his name?
No. They got rid of him after about 2 weeks.
I think he was backwards.
He was had a little bit of cabin fever.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'd come in there without a parka. He'd go sit by the big heater and put his parka on.
Mm-hmm.
People noticed it, of course.
Right.
But didn't say anything. But pretty soon he was gone. They shipped him off to town.
Yeah.
Because he was a little bit off-center.
So when people got hired for those jobs, did they do a mental health test to see if you were stable?
No, they just did an interview. See what his history was.
So do you remember any of the movies you saw? Do you remember any of the kinds of movies they brought up there?
Well, they were World War II junk movies.
How about westerns?
Yeah, anything they could get. They'd have to deal with other military entities. Like, you know, they had good relations with the Air Force. And they'd borrow and switch around. And there was nothing current. They were usually old movies.
Well, I know that in Barrow they had the theater. One of the Quonset huts was a movie theater. So they had that in Umiat also, huh? Wow. Now, it sounds like in Umiat you were allowed to eat with the men in the mess hall. They weren't as strict about keeping women separate.
No.
That must have been nice.
It was friendly.
Gave
people to talk to.
Yeah.
I didn't get cabin fever.
Yeah.
Though quite a few did. But the one example I remember is a fellow came into the movies and put his parka on.
And that other woman at Umiat, did you do things with her?
No.
No? How come?
Because I like to stay by myself and knit, and she liked to stay by herself and drink.
Oh. Yeah.
So then they moved to town in 1952. They were staying at a local hotel, the Pioneer Hotel, and they both died in the Pioneer Hotel fire.
Oh, that's too bad.
I expect they were both drunk.
What was her name? Do you remember their names?
Schreiner.
Wow.
Ralph Schreiner. And
say that again. What was their name?
Schreiner.
Like the Schreiner group with an N? Okay.
Ralph and...
Ralph Schreiner and... I'll think of her name in a little bit.
Okay.
That's too bad.
So was there a lot of drinking?
When they had it, they gulped it down. But we had, at Barrow, they had a, they called it a PX. It was a small Quonset. And every week, each resident was allowed a six-pack of beer. So there was some bartering back and forth on that. You know, that happened at dinner time, maybe. They say, what are you going to do with your six-pack this week, Joe? Well, I'm going to trade it. Can you trade it to me? Or, you know, they'd build up a little supply before, by the end of the week, they'd have a little supply coming in. Could have a party.
Mm-hmm.
But a six-pack of beer was the most you could buy.
Do you remember how much it cost?
No. It was the same as it cost in Fairbanks.
Well, I know what it cost in Fairbanks.
Nobody made any money off of it.
Mm-hmm.
What brand was it?
Yeah, I think it was different brands.
Olympia.
Schlitz.
Yeah, those were...
It wasn't the highest quality.
Hey, now.
It wasn't like home, like microbreweries that are all the big rage now. It was...
You can still buy Olympia.
Oh, you can?
Oh, yeah. It's made a little comeback.
All right. Now, the only people who could shop at that PX were Arctic Contractor employees.
Mm-hmm.
So the people from the village, could they get a six-pack?
They didn't. No, they wouldn't sell to them.
Even if they worked there?
Yes. They didn't have, they had no alcohol policy with the natives. But that didn't mean they didn't make their deals on the side.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably a smart policy to have.
It's interesting.
Because not everybody drank beer.
They probably wouldn't want to get blamed for accidents or...
But they let the non-native guys could buy the alcohol.
If they went to town, they usually, the parkers had big pockets. So they'd come back with a bottle of something, usually.
So in town they could bootleg something harder, trade the beer for something.
They could bring it to camp if they could get it by the supers who checked luggage.
Okay.
Oh, there was bootlegging going on back then?
Mm-mm, not a barrel.
No.
Just during on the side?
During the... Arctic Contractor says when just the Navy was there, there was some bootlegging.
Mm.
But so the Arctic Contractor's employees didn't bring whiskey in and then sell it in town?
No. If they did, they were on the next plane going south. There's a real strict rule on it.
So any hard liquor that was in camp was just what somebody brought in for themselves, and when it was drunk,
it was drunk.
And it was gone.
Or sold it.
Yeah. And then they
just had no alcohol policy, and it kept things calm.
Yeah.
Or they'd find out about it. It's hard to keep a secret in Barrow.
Because
if the guys at the carpenter shop had a bottle hidden someplace, the guys in the plumbing shop will know about it, know where it is. Because...
Mm-hmm.
Talk was cheap.
All right.
Yeah. Now, some of the women you talked about seemed to drink a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
Where did they get their alcohol?
They wore coats with big pockets, too.
And they brought it with them?
Yeah. Or brought it, if they got a trip to town, they'd always bring something back.
Mm-hmm.
Never had any problem with that. I never had any problem with ingredients for martinis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you could bring one or two bottles and nobody'd know it, you know.
Well, back then they didn't have the restrictions. The airplanes didn't have the restrictions like now. You can't carry liquids.
No, there was no security clearance.
Now, did Arctic Contractors say you weren't supposed to bring in?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But people snuck.
They said,
in.
This is our policy.
Right.
If you don't like it, we'll go someplace else to work.
Mm-hmm. But people brought it in for themselves.
But they sneaked it in anyway, the way they do here in the villages.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, if you kept it to a low roar, nobody bothered you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I heard that the Dew Line had a bar, but that would have been later, after maybe you'd already left.
I think it was after the construction.
Yeah. You left after the Dew Lines were built, you guys moved back to Fairbanks? Mm-hmm. In 57, did you say? Around there?
Finished about 57.
Okay. So that was 3 years you were up there again. Mm-hmm. And this time with the toddler.
What?
This time with the toddler, he kept you busy, George.
Wasn't a problem keeping him busy.
No, he kept you busy.
Yeah, he kept me busy.
Yeah.
Do you remember on the Dew Line construction any great accomplishments or huge blunders? Anything explosive like that on the Dew Line, or what, did it go pretty smooth?
Yeah, the supplies lieutenant in San Diego sent a year's supply of yeast and flour and salt to make bread, and they sent a year's supply of fuel oil and a year's supply of jam. Well, this 1 year, the only jam he sent was orange marmalade.
That's why you like orange marmalade.
Yeah. That's all we had was orange marmalade.
Yeah.
I liked it.
I could tell.
That's all we had. Once in a while as a treat, if the cook was going to town or one of the assistant cooks going to town, instead of bringing back a bottle of gin or scotch, he'd bring some jam or something like that.
Or chocolate? Did you get chocolate up there?
Hmm?
What about sweets like chocolate and candy?
Well, we had that little mini PX we could buy candy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to ask, besides beer, what else did they sell at the PX?
Cigarettes.
Cigarettes, candy.
Yeah, that J-Dad's that I have over here was purchased with a carton of cigarettes.
Wow.
But when my husband heard about it, he ran down the man who bought it for a carton of cigarettes and told him to go give the carton back, and then Jim bought it. I don't know what he paid for it, but probably paid a lot because it's a valuable relic.
Right. Well, he paid the person what it was worth.
Yeah.
Not just a carton.
I don't know what he paid him, but he paid him well, I'm sure of that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
He was very fair and things like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was offended that this guy would be so cheap as to get something that valuable for a carton of cigarettes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really taking advantage of.
Hmm?
That's really taking advantage of.
Oh,
person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a dumb native.
Yeah, and before your husband was there and treating them better, I think the Navy, they didn't even hire local people, I don't think.
No, they didn't.
No.
They did not.
Yeah. So, your husband was the first one to...
I would say that he was the first one to enforce local hire.
Mm-hmm. That's a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's an untold story.
Right. Well, that's why we're talking about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
To make sure he gets recognized for that.
He's never been recognized for that.
Well.
Except by me.
Right.
And the Eskimos.
Yeah.
Yeah, they know.
They know.
They know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a great thing, what he did. So anything else on the Dew Line time, or should we call it a day?
I didn't get out very much during the Dew Line because I had a toddler.
Mm-hmm. Did you go outside with him every day, though, so you play out?
If it wasn't too bad.
Mm-hmm.
You had to calculate when you went out and when you didn't, because the wind blew every day and you have to check the distance, the direction of the wind, because you always wanted it at your back. It's very cold, mm-hmm. wind.
So what kind of things would you do? Would you go sledding with him?
Mm-hmm. He had a little sled. We built a little backrest in it, and I'd take him with me to the village if the wind was okay.
Right. Did you build little hills to go sled down, or the snow
drifts? Didn't have to. There were drifts.
There are some pretty big drifts for sledding on, probably.
The wind blows all the time.
Yep.
Up there.
Yeah, I see you have pictures of the Quonset huts totally covered with snow.
Yeah, they're totally buried.
That'd be kind of...
Did you dig out the windows to get light? The little bit of daylight there was?
No, I didn't have to do that. It would seep in the windows.
The snow would?
Snow would,
yeah. Through the cracks?
Because it was that close a fit.
Yeah. No, those Quonset huts were not the most appropriate for
the Arctic.
They were
built for the South Pacific. And not Barrow.
Not for the Arctic, that's
but
for sure.
But we were glad to have some place to live.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Are we finished for today?
I think so.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.